Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences and related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. And you are more than welcome to ring into the show to make comments or ask questions. We'd also like to let you know that we've got a myriad of services and support available through our organization, Toward the Light. And we'd also like to encourage you to make a donation to Toward the Light to support our services and also this wonderful program that you're listening to now. For more information, please visit our websites, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. This week, I'm very pleased to have a fellow near-death experiencer who's written a lovely, lovely book entitled Backward, Returning to Our Source for Answers. The author's name is Nancy L. Dannison, and I'm very pleased to welcome Nancy to the show. Hello, Nancy, and welcome to Toward the Light.
Hello, Juliet. I'm very pleased to be with you today.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, and I've certainly been enjoying reading your book. It's wonderful, and it's really, really rich in content and so refreshing to me. So what I'd like to do is, I know that in the book you put your NDE towards the back of the book, but I'm going to reverse this and encourage you to share a little bit about your near-death experience and what catapulted you into the work that you are doing now, because I know you definitely gained some great, great insight as a result of this experience. So feel free by sharing with us your near-death experience.
Well, I can give you and your listeners a brief overview, but as you can see,
it goes very deep.
Several books for me to tell everything that happened during my near-death experience.
Oh, indeed, and I certainly understand that.
Actually, I guess my experience was very different from a lot of others in that my time in the light was spent primarily gathering information. Once I realized that all this information was downloading into my mind, I just started soaking it up like a sponge.
Mm.
Well, what started my experience was I was in the hospital for a radiological procedure right before breast surgery. They thought that I might have breast cancer, and I didn't realize at the time that you could have breast cancer without having a lump, that there are certain kinds of cancer that when the cells in the tumor die, they leave calcifications behind, and the calcifications show up on a mammogram. So that's why it's very important to have a mammogram. But so I didn't have a lump, but the surgeon had to know where to cut. So what they do is this procedure called a needle localization procedure. The radiologist sticks a needle in to the area where the surgeon's supposed to cut and draws a little diagram for the surgeon to show how much, you know, he should cut out during the surgery. So that's why I was in the hospital having that needle localization procedure done. And either the local anesthetic or something about the procedure, I really don't know what caused my death. Because I was alone when it happened, the radiologist and the technician had left the room to get the mammograms developed. And right after they left, so did I.
Now, were you under anesthesia or were you awake?
I was awake. I had just a local anesthetic.
Okay.
So that
okay.
I wouldn't feel all the pain of the needle going in. But no, I was wide awake.
Oh, okay.
And the doctors, the ones that are, you know, kind of giving me an opinion on this now, said that I probably had what they call a vasovagal reaction, which I guess means that your blood pressure just drops, you know, precipitously down to nothing. And I could feel, you know, my blood pressure dropping, and I could feel that I was pulling out of my body little by little and sinking down into kind of like the center, and then I just kind of whooshed out. And I was standing right in front of my body, And I knew that I was standing in front of my body, and I knew I was still alive, and I just said to myself, ooh, this is so cool.
Now, did you kind of sink down into your solar plexus area and then sort of emerge out from there? How did that actually happen when you were leaving your body, or can you tell?
I don't know. It felt like I was just pulling out of it, like taking off clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Like pull your arms and legs out of clothes.
Mm.
That's the way it felt. I was just
okay.
pulling out and then sinking down. And I was like a little ball of energy, and then I just went whooshing out from there. That's the best I can describe it.
Well, that's a very good analogy because, you know, I've been talking about this for a long time with people, that death really is just like discarding an old piece of clothing. And there's all of these testimonies about just that sensation, how interesting that you just sort of pull away from the body or discard the body, and yet you're still very much intact as you. So go ahead, proceed with your experience here. This is very interesting.
Okay, well, after I realized I was standing in front of my body, I started looking forward, and I realized I could only see blackness. So I felt like I was in a dark void, but I could feel that there were people around me. You know how you can feel when somebody's in the room even though it's dark and you can't see them?
Oh, yes. Mm.
And I saw this little pinpoint of light off in the distance, and in my mind I said to myself, oh, I know what this is. I'm supposed to go into the light. And as soon as I thought that, I was in the light, and it was all around me and all through me. It was like the light was being absorbed into my spiritual body, for lack of another word, and kind of making my molecules kind of spread out a little bit. And this overwhelming love and joy and peace and acceptance, and you know what it feels like.
Oh, yes.
No way to describe it in human terms, because there's nothing that's anywhere near that glorious. So I felt that. And then I realized that I was emanating those same feelings back into the light. So it was like a complete circle coming through me and going back out from me.
Mm-hmm.
I saw nothing. I heard nothing. I smelled nothing. There was just, I mean, I was in the light, and I knew I was in the light, but there was absolutely nothing around me. So I was trying to figure out what had happened to me. You know, I thought I was, before I left my body, I thought I was passing out. So I was trying to figure out, well, did I pass out? Was I unconscious? Was I hallucinating? You know, so I was going over my body and trying to make a diagnosis, you know, of what had happened to me.
That's interesting. So you were actually, whilst you were in this state, you were questioning yourself whether you were having an hallucination or if you were dead or what have you, or your body was dead.
I thought that I was dead never crossed my mind.
Okay. Yeah, because it normally doesn't cross people's minds.
Well, it was obvious I wasn't dead.
Exactly.
You know, I'd never been more alive and more awake in my life. So I spent a lot of time early in my NDE just going over, you know, what my body felt like and realizing that I couldn't feel things anymore. I had no skin to feel anything.
Yeah.
And I missed, you know, the sensation of having a skin. I missed sunlight and wind, and I missed chocolate. I mean, that was a big thing during my NDE. It was, oh, my gosh, I'm never going to have chocolate again.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I did. And I realized that I had all my memories intact, all my emotions were there, everything that I was used to having in a human body, but without the fear.
I had
no fear, no dread, no alarm, you know, none of those survival-based human emotions.
And yet you were missing the human sensory experience.
Yes, I was.
That's very interesting, because I never, and that's just me, I never even thought of that. I thought, oh, no, I'm so profoundly free, and I was really excited about that, but I don't hang out in my body too much anyway. But that's very interesting that you had this, and I remember, and perhaps you're familiar with this too, where PMH Atwater is describing the darkness as the more feminine version of the light, and feeling womb-like and safe. And I'm wondering if that was sort of the initial experience that you were describing, you know, when you experience darkness and yet awareness of what is around you. And I just talked to somebody who had that kind of experience as well, so that's quite something. So I get that image of the maternal sort of energy of the light.
I have a friend who had a what you know we call a dark ND the same way. Mm. My understanding is that that's the very first stage of the crossing over process, and that if that's all the farther you get, then that's all you remember,
uh-huh.
the darkness. But my understanding, and see, this is one of the pieces of information that came to me later on in my near-death experience. I got the answers to all my metaphysical questions, one of which was, well, what happens when we die? I wanted to know, was I experiencing something that's typical? And so I did get the answers to those questions. And it's my understanding that it's a process, a protocol. It's a very orderly transition from being in a human body and feeling what that's like to going into our spiritual body and making that transition, and then going on into higher states of evolution.
Yes.
And those are all described in my book.
And what year did this happen?
1994.
94. Wow, okay. That was a rather auspicious year for a lot of people. I can certainly recall that, too.
It took me a long time to get this book finished. I wrote the first part of it in 1995. I was processing it. You know, it takes a lot of years.
Oh, it does.
PMH Atwater says it takes about 7 years. And
at least.
Yeah, it did take me that long. And then I started writing the rest of it in 2001. And it took me about 5 years to write this book. And then I've got half of four more started. Once things started coming to me, my memory started coming back to me, I was able to get them down on paper.
Sure.
So after I was having this experience of, you know, missing the human experience, I missed it, but not in the sense that I wanted to go back to it. It was more like an acknowledgement of how wonderful it is to be in a human body and how I had taken for granted so much of the sensory input that we are used to when we're in a human body, and I had not given it enough credit. I had not been grateful enough for it.
Yes, yes.
So I went from that to having all this information downloading into my brain. And downloading is the wrong term, as you know, but there's really no way to explain, I don't think, having a wealth of information suddenly appear in your mind without you having ever learned it.
Actually, that's a rather common metaphor. I think it's quite a good one, actually, because you're so right. It just suddenly descends upon you, and then boom. And you've just got to be with it and take it in and respond accordingly. So I think that's a good analogy for that.
I've heard people call it knowing. I think I've heard you say that, and I've heard other people call it just knowing.
Mm.
And so I was receiving knowing on a lot of different things. I had no idea why it was coming to. Some of it was physics. Some of it was, I can remember, I got a whole lot of information about how humans completely misunderstand mental illness, and we treat people that we label with the words mental illness horribly.
Oh, boy,
when they should be honored,
and
their gifts should be recognized.
Yes.
And that they are really people who are using abilities that may not be normal for humans, but that's because they're above the norm, not below it.
Exactly, exactly. And this is such a good point, Nancy, that we really do need to emphasize here, because there is so much more of this going on that, you know, number one, people who are NDEs and even people who've had spiritually transformative experiences become rewired, as it were. And then PMH has also talked about the new children, and they're just completely rewired from birth. So what's being considered normal or acceptable, which personally I never regarded as acceptable, to be quite honest, is really having to be redefined now, because it's in my way of thinking and experience, it's never been accurate and it's never been proper.
So I understand where it comes from because, you know, as you know, we are not our bodies.
Indeed.
These bodies are human animals. Humans are an animal that has a herd mentality, like cattle and horses. And in a herd type of animal, the norm is where the safety is. You want to be right in the center of the pack. You know? That's where you have more people around you as a buffer against, you know, predators. So it's an animal instinct, I think, to come up with all these normal values. But I don't think it's serving our society well at all now.
No. And that's why the messages we get from our experiences are so important to share, because all of this is, you know, we've got to go back to the drawing board with it and redefine and restructure it and revise it.
Right.
Obviously. Well,
hopefully messengers like you and PMH and a lot of the guests that you've had on your show are doing just that. They're bringing these messages, and they're now being heard thanks to the wonderful work you're doing on Toward the Light Radio.
Well, I'm very grateful for this. And, you know, when something else occurred to me, too, is that often when when we're in the middle of our NDE or we've just had the NDE, some people won't remember it at all, or some people will only remember parts of their experience. And then others will remember the whole thing. How was it with you? Did you actually experience more recall after the fact? You know, like several years after the fact, or did you pretty much have it all intact right after you had the experience?
I had most of it intact right after the experience. But see, that was my gift. You know, a lot of people come back with, you know, gifts of healing, psychic gifts, you know, all kinds of different gifts. My gift was memory and being able to put my experience into words. And I also, Juliet, I chose to come back. I did not reach any kind of barrier. Nobody ever told me it wasn't my time. My understanding is that I was finished with human life. I went back home. That's where I was supposed to be. I was not going to be back in this body. And one of the things that I... when I was getting all these downloads of information from what I call universal knowledge, one of the things I wanted to know was, why was this experience not like what religion had taught me it would be like? And in response to that, I saw the entire history of planet Earth and the development of humans on it, and I watched how religion started in the human race and how it had progressed and how the different churches, you know, were created and what it was going to be like in the future. And as a result of that, I saw a lot of the evolution of the planet and a lot of things that were going to happen in the future as kind of that was the context. I wasn't really studying that. I was studying religion, but I saw these other things as part of the context. And after I had seen all that, I was so, I can't really think of the emotional term that fits, but let's use dismayed. I was dismayed, I was angry, I was very upset that so many of us, while we are in human form, are led so far astray when life and death are so simple.
Yes.
And the fact that we automatically return to the source. I mean, it's just so simple. It's straightforward. It's direct. It's logical. It's the most loving process possible. And I was just so upset that we were not told these truths. I was not told these truths before I had my near-death experience. So I wanted to come back and tell people. So that's partly why I remember so much, was I chose to come back here. And while I was going backwards through my near-death experience, you know, back into the body, I was cramming my brain full of things. Now, remember this, remember this, remember this.
Wow.
And I lost, you know, like 99% of it. But the 1% of it that I did retain, I have been able to keep since 1994. And then as I've been working on the book, you know, the more I think about my near-death experience, the more memory comes back to me.
Yes. Yeah, I understand that, too, because it was... even though I got my NDE account of one of my NDEs, my big one in the mid-70s, and that, of course, was also from cancer. You know, I had it in the mid-70s, and yet it took me, well, over 20 years, you know, to actually start to write it down, and that's still a summary. It certainly doesn't entail the whole thing, but you get the gist of it. It's definitely impacted a lot of people, and you know, I've certainly not written a book yet myself, and so many people like yourself are way ahead of me in that regard. But then I've been doing it in other ways, you know, sharing with all of this. But it can, I mean, it can take years and years and years, and then more and more bits of information will come to you as you're integrating your experience, and then you will start to be able to connect all the dots, as it were, put it all together, and then share it with people. And I think it's really quite tremendous. I still appreciate what you've written. I'm going to say the name of your book again to our listeners. It's called Backwards, and I like that because we go back into source, really, and back to the truth. Backwards, returning to our source for answers. On the website is backwardsbooks.com. Now, are people able to order this directly from you, or they've got to go through the publisher? Or it's not even officially out yet, or is it?
I think the books are being delivered to the warehouse this week.
Okay.
And
all
I think
right.
Orders will start being filled October 1st. People can get ordering information from my website, backwardsbooks.com.
Okay.
I'm right now not set up to handle orders directly myself. But you can get them from Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and then from my publisher, and then from our distributor, and all that information is on my website. There's also a toll-free number, if I might be able to give that.
Sure, absolutely.
800-247-6553. That's 1-800-247-6553. And that's at the warehouse, so taking orders there.
Okay, that's really good to know. It's a good read. So why don't we talk about some of the content in your book, too, and, of course, whatever else you'd like to share about the actual experience. Like, for example, the process of returning. How long were you away from the body, or do you even know?
I don't know. It's however long it takes to develop the set of mammograms, and I don't know how far away the technician had to walk to get them developed. I don't know how long the doctor was gone. When I came back into the body, the doctor and technician were already back in the room looking at the mammograms up on a view box, and apparently they had not noticed. I mean, I didn't look any different. Now, that's one of the very unique things about my experience as well, Juliet, was while I was dead, I saw my body. You know, a lot of people, you know, see their body down below somewhere, and I did that too. That's when I first got the inkling that I might be dead, because I saw the body, and I felt like I had no connection to it at all. It was a chair, the floor, the body. I mean, it had no emotional connection. But that's when I first started thinking, oh, maybe I'm dead. And I thought, nah, I can't be dead. I didn't go through a tunnel. And then instantly I'm in a tunnel. And that's when I started manifesting reality just instantly through my thoughts. And I realized, you know, that I wasn't in a tunnel. I was in the light. And I realized I must have manifested this tunnel into physical reality just by thinking it. And that's one of the very few words that came to me was the word manifesting. But during this process of watching, you know, or seeing my body in another dimension or in another place, I mean, I knew it was in the radiology room, I was given the information that body would recover and continue living without me in it.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a very strange thing. I was also given the information that there are, I don't know how many, but there are definitely human animals walking this earth right now and have in the past who do not have souls inside them. They just were not chosen by being of light to be a, you know, to be a partner through a human lifetime. And my body was going to be one of them.
So we're not even talking about a possible walk-in or an exchange of souls in the body, or you were given to believe that, the body would just animate without a soul. That's a very interesting concept there. I have to look into that one.
Well, that's why I devote so much of my book to the making the point that there are two beings inside this physical frame. There's a human animal that has its own personality, its own emotions, its own thoughts, its own memories, its own instincts, its own life force, its own personality. And then there, as beings of light, we choose to inhabit, certain humans from time to time. And then we bring our own, intelligence and personality and emotions and memories and all that into the human being, so that there are two beings in there, neither of which is dependent upon the other for life.
I remember Dr. Michael Newton, and you and I were talking about him yesterday, mentioning this in his books, Journey of Souls and then Destiny of Souls, and some of the subjects that were under hypnosis were actually talking about choosing a body and then saying, okay, will my soul be able to work with the personality of, this particular body and so on. So it's almost like becoming a roommate, with these sort of two conjoining entities. That's very interesting how that works. And yet I didn't believe I had really been aware of the human animal being able to function independently of the soul. Though sometimes it definitely appears that way when I see certain people. It just feels like they're vacant, kind of.
Yes, in fact, I have met one other person who was like that. Now, I had another. I don't know if it was a near-death experience or whether. Or what it was, because I was asleep when it happened. I was asleep before it happened, and I woke up from sleep. But I had a meeting with my counsel, and in that meeting, I was given the option again of staying or going. I could stay in this body. If I stayed, I would have to go through a lot of physical pain and suffering, because, dying's not good for your health. Near-death experiences are not the healthiest population on the planet. But so I was told I could stay in this body and suffer with it through the rest of its lifetime, or I could go home, and it wouldn't be considered a breach of contract. I hadn't finished the book yet. I hadn't even come close. And so I was being told, okay, so you didn't get the message out that you came back to give, but we won't hold it against you, kind of thing.
Wow.
And at that point, again, I was given the information that if I chose to come home, the body would recover and continue to go on without me. Now, I would have loved to have watched that, to see what kind of personality this body would have without me, probably better.
That is so interesting. That is very interesting.
Isn't that wild? One of the other wildest thing that I, since we're talking about wild things, wildest concepts that I got during my NDE, when I had access to this universal knowledge, was that the entity that we call God, and you and I call Source, is one of a race of beings. It is not the only or the ultimate being. It's just the one that manifested our universe.
Yes. I've heard about that too, and even though I've had a few NDEs and a number of spiritually transformative experiences, I don't purport to have seen or embraced the whole of all that is, or source, or light source, as I also like to call it. I feel that I've only touched the tip of the iceberg, as it were, and that it's so vast. I want to back up just slightly, because I know that you were mentioning, having a near-death experience and feeling like you needed to go through a tunnel, but never once did I go through a tunnel during any of my NDEs, and PMH Atwater has mentioned numerous times, and I have too, that, and I think her statistic is 5% or less.
Oh, really?
Experience the tunnel. So, that's not a requirement for having a near-death experience. There's a myriad of ways to have the experience, and I think in some ways, people typically who have more sudden experiences, like, for example, accident or cardiac arrest or what have you, might be more prone to experience the tunnel as opposed to somebody who has a more gradual dying process, as I did, you know, because I was dying of cancer and then I went into a coma.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, I never was aware of just going out cold and being unconscious. To me, from my vantage point, I was always conscious. But again,
mine was gradual too, and I was always conscious. So maybe that, yeah, that supports your theory.
Yes, and also, you know, when you thought of something, for example, you thought of a tunnel, and then suddenly you were in a tunnel. You thought of a light, and then you went into the light, and that, you know, was also my experience, that I could think of someone, some place, or something, and then it would instantly manifest. And that's the interesting thing about being on the other side, as opposed to operating on the physical plane, which is a lower vibrational frequency, is that things happen ever so quickly, just with a thought.
Yes.
On the other side.
I think that that is one of our natural abilities. That's the first of our natural abilities that comes to us immediately upon getting out of the body.
Yes.
I think that that's why so many people do, well, maybe there's not so many people, but people manifest the early stages of their own near-death experience. I mean, I think they manifest a tunnel if that's what they expect, or if they expect to travel through the universe, you know, through the stars, they manifest that experience for themselves. They manifest people who come to greet them. They manifest gardens and different scenery, you know, that they see during their near-death experience. I think that's just a common feature of the early stages of the crossing over process, because it's the process is designed to comfort us. So whatever would comfort us will appear for
us to
begin to experience.
You're so right about that, and I've even written about that as well. And another interesting thing about this, though, which is a little bit difficult, is Dr. Peter Finnick, and he is going to be on Toward the Light next week. He wasn't able to make it last week because his motor car broke down, bless him. But I think everything is going to be fine. But, you know, he's been doing NDE research for years and years and years, and he actually pointed out that child NDEs, you know, their experiences are more organic, as it were, and not influenced by society or culture or religious figures and all of that sort of stuff. But also he points out that in the earlier days when the near-death experience wasn't really known about, people would just share their experiences as they had them. But now, because the near-death experience has been circulating all over the place, that people do, you know, yourself included, even have these ideas of a protocol, as it were, that should take place during an NDE. So they expect, oh, right, I'm supposed to go through a tunnel, or I'm supposed to have this experience or that. And so it can color the actual experience.
Yes.
And maybe make it not so organic as it originally would have been. With me, during all of my NDEs, funnily enough, for some reason I was so sheltered that I didn't even know the term near-death experience. I never even heard of Raymond Moody or any of this stuff until 10 years ago, believe it or not. So nothing of my experience was influenced by other people's experiences because I didn't even know about them.
Well, I think I didn't know anything about near-death experiences or in the research. I'd never heard anything, but apparently I had seen movies or something where people went through a tunnel, because I did know that piece of it.
Interesting. Yes.
And I started reading those books, I think, a couple years. Well, actually, it was about 18 months after my near-death experience. And that's what kind of validated for me that I hadn't hallucinated like my doctors were telling me, you know. I knew it was a real experience, but I also assumed that nobody else on the planet has ever had one until I started reading.
Isn't that the truth, too? And doctors so typically do that. And, again, thanks to people like Dr. Peter Finnick and Dr. Pim Van Lommel and Dr. Pam Kurtzer, all of whom are coming up on Toward the Light, they've all been able to clearly distinguish the difference between an hallucination and a near-death experience. They're very, very different. And also, when someone hallucinates, they do not have that clear memory as you've had, for example, as I've had, for example. And it's just going to be something entirely different. So the doctors who are trying to claim that you've had a hallucination or need psychiatric evaluation or all that nonsense, they're the ones who are in ignorance. And, hopefully at some point they will be trained. And I think in medical school there needs to be a course just on the dying process and on near-death experiences, because obviously with the technology that exists now, people are living. They're coming back a lot more than just simply crossing over into the story kind of thing. So
I think there's another reason for there being a proliferation of near-death experiences at this particular point in time, Juliet, because I saw, when I was viewing the entire history of the planet, I saw that we're in the, what I'm calling the second epoch now. The first epoch ended with cataclysmic terraforming of the Earth. The continents started shifting and the weather changed. That's when all the dinosaurs and a lot of animals died off. Humans died off, too. And then there was a second epoch. The human species started a second version of the human species. We're in that epoch now, but we're toward the end of it. And there will be a very much shorter third epoch coming soon. And I know every near-death experiencer says, the world's going to end in my lifetime. That's kind of a common theme through history. And the reason why they're always inaccurate is because, as you have indicated in your website, there is no time.
Exactly.
Everything's in the present when you're out of a human body.
Mm.
But I still got the sense that we're coming toward the end of the second epoch. There will be many, many things happening that I see happening right now. A lot of planetary changes, weather changes, diseases mutating into something that cannot be treated with our current technology, and that a lot of people are going to be given the choice whether to stay or to go. And so I think that at this particular point in time, a lot more messengers are being brought forward. And clearly you are one of them, and all the people that you have on your show, they're all messengers. I'm a messenger. And I think we're all coming at this point in time because it's needed so much more at this point in time.
Yes, and first-hand accounts as opposed to just hypothesizing or theorizing or what have you. And this is so true. And all of the times when I was on the other side, I was told I had come back to do this work, and I was fighting it. I thought, oh, blimey, no, I don't want to go there. And yet I wasn't granted the choice. So that's also very interesting to note, how some people are given the choice whether to stay at home on the other side or return to this plane, this dimension. And I was told in no uncertain terms, very lovingly, mind you, but very certainly, that I had come back.
Well, I think we make contracts,
yes,
with each other and just maybe with the source or with our council for sure.
Yes.
And, those people are relying on us for contracts.
Yeah.
If we volunteered to bring a message here, we're going to bring that message.
Boy, oh boy. And every day I pray, I want to do my work. I want to do it in the best way possible and to be effective with it. So really I'm trying to cooperate, even though I'm not going to lie, I'm dreadfully homesick.
Oh, I know that feeling.
But, and so when did you actually go for, well, let me back up a little bit. When was your second STE, or near-death-like experience, that you had more recently?
Well, I've had, that was in 2001. I think I also, my first NDE was when I was like maybe 2 years old, and that was just a very brief one.
Yeah.
The big one was in 1994, and then I had several out-of-body experiences since 1994, because I was very ill again in 2001, and I was very close to dying, and I think that's when I had this meeting with my council. And I had met with my council before, and that's just what I call them. It's a group of beings of light who, my impression is, are there to help me, to help keep me on track and to give me guidance and to answer questions for me and basically just to keep tabs on me to make sure I'm okay and, you know, doing my thing. And when I met with them before, it had always been kind of a formal thing. Like, I've heard people talk about near-death experiences where they felt like they were being judged because they met with their counsel, you know, and they felt like they were being questioned and their life was being looked at and they were being judged. Well, I don't sense it as being judged so much as being guided and helped. But when I'd had meetings with them before, they were always very formal. This one, in 2001, when I was very ill, appeared to me to be called in a hurry. You know, it was like a much less formal feeling, and my parents were there. And just for a second, I saw them with their faces on that they had when they were my human parents. And then they, you know, they lost those, and everybody just looked like a being of light, as always.
Yes.
But when I saw them, I was kicking myself, saying, oh, no, if I'd known that they were so evolved that they could be on my council, I would have treated them with more respect.
Wow.
But then the last person to come into the council meeting was somebody who's in human form. And it's somebody I had met, and his name is Jeff, and I don't know which Jeff. But when I saw Jeff, I thought, oh, my gosh, this is so serious that they had to call in the field agents.
What month was that?
I think it was...
Or roughly time of year, was that?
I think it was either July or August of 2001.
Wow, so that was right before the event of so-called 9/11, as they call it in America.
You know, I did not know about 9/11, but the Friday before, I woke up in the middle of the morning and said, get all your money out of the stock market, and I did.
Wow.
I mean, I knew something huge was going to happen, but I didn't know what it was. And, of course, I just thought of myself. I didn't think of anybody else. I just wanted to take care of myself.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, and the reason I ask that is because after that event happened, you know, there's this feeling of urgency. Oh, my gosh, we've got to do something. Yet also people like myself who knew about it in advance also sensed that urgency, so maybe there was... Indeed, this knowing within you and the group in your council, even though maybe in a quote-unquote conscious mind or from the egoic mind, you were not aware of the event or the details, but just aware that there was something coming up and that you were needed to help with the healing process because... Again, an event of that magnitude does generate a lot of fear, and that is what we need to help, you know, relieve people of the fear that keeps them down and keeps them, you know, when we're in a state of fear, then we can't see truth and we can't experience or know love. So that's why I was asking about that, you know, somehow, because you did mention it was 2001 and... Boy, there was a lot to happen that year for sure.
I never made that connection. Thank you.
So then, was it that time that you actually went to work diligently writing the book?
Yes. Okay. I was ill for a year and couldn't work. And I just started reliving my near-death experience, you know, more and more. And I'd wake up every morning at 4:30 and I would have a chapter in my head.
Wow.
And I would just sit down and write. And the chapters didn't... It seemed to relate to one another. I had about 700 pages when I was finished, and I had to call out some of them to put into this book, and then the others are all in my future books. But that's the way they came to me. And I had no idea what a chapter was going to say until I finished typing it up, and then I could read it. And then I'd remember it. You know, once I read it, most of it I remembered. Some of it I didn't know that I knew. And some of it was new to me, or the way it was stated was... kind of a revelation to me. Now, my thinking, and some people have asked me if I've channeled these books, and I think the answer to that is the only person I'm channeling is me.
Yeah.
You know, my understanding is that the soul, the energy that we are calling a soul, is just part of the total energy of our being of light. So we are a being of light composed entirely of light and energy. We take a small portion of that and invest it into a human life as a soul. So you stay in the light while your soul is here having the human adventure. And you can communicate with yourself, you know, through meditation or however you have trained yourself to center
connect.
And to be able to access information. But I think this information is coming from me as a being of light, as opposed to some other entity.
You know, I felt that a lot myself because I've, again, I've even shared with people that our being is so huge that there's no way that it could be encased in this body and our soul and our being is experiencing other things simultaneously.
Yeah.
And I've, I love the word that you're using, source beams. I think that's so beautiful because I've used, even in the few talks that I've given, the analogy of a spider plant and the spider plant itself being the source and then all the offshoots being, as you call it, the source beams or the individual expressions of source. And then the very, 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 very tip of each shoot is maybe the human in expression, as it were, of the soul. But there's different human expressions happening simultaneously, too. You know, according to entities like Sethu, who've talked about that. And I think even Michael Newton, with his work, has mentioned that sort of thing, too. So this is very, very interesting. But I think it's important, really, to emphasize the fact that we have divine nature. Well, I'm seeing we've got less than 10 minutes left, so I want to encourage you to talk about that a little bit because you're sharing this so beautifully in your book about, you know, Source and the fact that we are all a part of Source and never separate from Source.
That was the most dramatic and humbling and wonderful part of my near-death experience. After I started having all this information come into my head, I met beings of light, you know, like a lot of people do, and then I got back all of my memories, of my eternal memories, you know, from all my various lifetimes. I merged into these five other beings of light and became a collective being of six, and then together we were going back into, quote, the rest of us, and I understood the rest of us to be the source, the entity that we call God. But the closer I got to merging into Source, and we started merging through, for lack of a better term, maybe the aura. And like I think that the light is the source's aura or energy field. And
yes.
As you get closer and closer to the core of it, it becomes brighter and brighter, and you have access to more and more of universal knowledge. So as I was getting, the six of us were getting closer and closer to merging directly into the core of Source, I got this unbelievably intimate experience and knowledge of it. And my understanding is that the entity that we call God, Source, is one being that's more like an energy field than it is like a, you know, when we think being, we think of a human being, you know, something that's got an outward skin that separates it from everything else.
Yes,
the source
yes.
is one huge energy field, and that's why I came up with the term source beams. It's like the sun.
Exactly, yes.
And it radiates energy outward like the sun does, and like sunbeams, I came up with source beams. But my understanding is that the source is a being with a definite personality. It's extremely intelligent, extremely emotional, incredibly loving by nature. I mean, it has no capacity for anything but unconditional love in volumes and volumes. I mean, blissful love.
Yes.
It's extremely curious.
Yes.
And it has this talent, this ability to manifest physical reality. And so what it did, because it was a being alone in some environment, it wanted to experience itself. It knows itself intellectually. It wanted to have the actual experience of what it would feel like. And it wanted to experience what having somebody else out there would feel like. So it projected energy out as thoughts, just like we dream. You know, in our dreams, we create an environment, and then we populate it with people. The source created an environment. We call it the universe. It then invested its own self-awareness into some of the beings in that environment, some of which are we call human beings. in our dreams, we have the same thing. We have people in our dreams, and usually we're one of the people. But the source, you know, created or thought of or manifest, that's the word that fits, manifesting, manifested this universe and everybody in it. But none of it is separate from the source any more than our dreams are separate from us.
Right.
They're just thoughts. And my understanding, when I got close enough to source to fully experience this, Joy, it makes me cry.
Oh, I know, Madeira, I feel it with you.
When I got that close, it was like, and I realized that I have never been a separate being. I have never been alone. I have never been out there on my own. I have never been anywhere but right in the heart of the source to experience the exquisiteness of the love that it takes to allow me to feel separate and alone and have all these experiences and human adventures and all the other types of beings I've been in, just so I could bring those experiences back to the source. And it's all those experiences that all of us are having. That's what creates universal knowledge. It all mounts up or adds up within the source. But then the source lets me have that experience of individuality, and I can still go back right into the center of the source and feel its collective oneness. I can feel like I'm anybody else that has ever been thought of by the source.
Yeah.
I can feel like I'm myself again. It's just the most incredible. there are no words to describe it.
The love that
I felt, you know, experiencing that. And then to be allowed to choose. I mean, here I am right on the verge of merging completely back into source and living that exquisite love and acceptance and joy, you know, forever and ever, amen. But I wanted to help the people that were here. You know, I wanted to bring them the message that I had gotten through my near-death experience. And for source to say, okay, do it.
Well, that love is just so profound, and being just thinking about it, talking about it, gets me all choked up, too, because really, how would I not be to feel that kind of love? And, you know, how can we really, really let people know that that is the truth about source, that there's no angry, vindictive, vengeful, whatever you want to call it, he-god that's going to punish us? It's so ludicrous, and I think as enough people are talking about their experiences with source, and the only judgments come from the human ego and not from source. It is just the most amazing thing, and hopefully this is going to help to bring about peace of mind to people. There is nothing to fear whatever, because source is love, and
we're never separate from it. See, that's the piece that people, it's so easy to believe this illusion of separateness. I mean, we can look in the mirror and we see that our skin ends and something else begins, you know.
Yeah.
It's just so easy with the amnesia
yeah.
that human experience gives us to think that we're alone and that we're separate and that God is something out there somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's not true. We're in God.
Exactly. Always. Always, always, always.
And it's just an illusion that we're not there.
And I was so consistently reminded of that during my NDEs and also every STE I've had, the same message always prevails. It always comes through. And I can't tell you how grateful I am for that and for people like you who are sharing this. And my goodness, here we've come to another hour of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Nancy, it has been so wonderful having you on the show, and I know we could talk about this stuff forever, and I'll definitely have to have you back on the show. Again, we've been speaking to Nancy L. Dannison, author of Backwards, the beautiful book, Backwards, Returning to Our Source for Answers. You can find out more about this tremendous book, which is going to be released the beginning of October, by going to backwardsbooks.com. You're listening to Toward the Light, Leaning Back to the Source. And this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you, it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember, that only love prevails. Next week, for sure, we will have Dr. Peter Finnick on Toward the Light. Looking forward to joining everybody next week for another transmission of Toward the Light, leading back to the source. Again, do visit our website, towardthelight.org and towardthelight.info. Blessings and light to all. We will talk to you next week.